people experience homelessness, it's bad for their health and for the health of the entire community. The solution? Prevent people from losing their housing in the first place. But that process isn't exactly straightforward. People have to navigate a complicated system to get assistance, and organizations have to collaborate to make sure they're serving everyone as effectively as possible. Today on Talk of Alaska, we'll discuss what's happening around the state to prevent homelessness.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
This is Talk of Alaska. I'm Ann Hillman. Thousands of Alaskans have experienced homelessness, and thousands more have been on the brink. What stops them from falling over? How do we prevent homelessness? Today's program is part of Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk, which looks at what's happening in the state to make communities stronger. Joining me in the studio today are Robin Dempsey, the Homeless Family Services Program Director at Catholic Social Services, and Dave Rose, the coordinator for the MATSU Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have you or someone you know been on the brink of homelessness? What helped you stay in your home? Share your story by calling 1-800-478-8255 statewide or 550-8422 in Anchorage. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. So over the past couple of months, I've been following the story of a man who became ill and then he couldn't work for a couple of months. He ended up getting behind on his rent and then jumping through a ton of hoops so that he could pay his bills. Although ultimately really what he just wanted was to get back to work. So I'm wondering how common are stories like this, that a person just hits some really unexpected speed bump and then suddenly they're on the verge of losing their house. Dave, is this pretty common?
Unfortunately, it's more common than you would think. And perhaps it's our jobs, but we see it every day. In the MATSU Valley, we have a tradition in the valley of if you see someone in the ditch, especially this time of year, you stop and you see if they need help. And if you've got a truck or if you've got a tow strap with a truck, you help pull them out. And, you know, it's the same kind of thing with homelessness, with preventing homelessness. What you just described is very real. Someone getting sick, someone injured, someone who then can't make it to work, and they've a bump in the road, they're in the ditch. What are you going to do to help out?
And same in Anchorage, right?
Absolutely. We have this definitely the same issue, and we have a particular person I'd just like to mention. His name is Murray, and he fell into this exact same situation. He had been permanently housed for 29 years. He lived in the same apartment. He started to get sick, and during that time, he found it harder and harder to go to work. He got to the point where he couldn't work any longer and actually sold his truck in order to pay his rent. His illness got to the point where he was hospitalized, and he came to our attention because we have the medical respite program at the Brother Francis Shelter. So the hospital that he was in contacted us, referred him to our medical respite, and he was the perfect candidate. So we were able to bring Murray in. He really needed time to recover, and he just needed a safe place to be during that recovery. So during that time, we really connected him with other specialists, found out that he really had a particular issue with his legs that was something that they could diagnose and get a medication for. Once he started on that medication, he was really kind of off and running at that point. And we were able to rapidly rehouse him. And then with our employment specialist who he's working with now, he's really kind of back on the road to independence.
And so he ended up losing his housing because, like, while he was hospitalized.
Absolutely, yeah. It was just prior, yeah. But that's really was the progression that once he went into the hospital, he was evicted from his apartment.
Were there any systems in place that could have jumped in before that before that eviction happened?
I think part of the issue, again, you know, Murray was a single male, and I think he was very concerned about losing time from work. So rather than really kind of addressing his health issues, he just kind of kept plugging along until his health issues really became kind of beyond what he could manage. I think if he had, you know, just even considered that he might have been able to seek medical attention sooner, that really might have been helpful. And that's something, too, that we're working on at the Brother Francis Shelter, because we have a clinic there now. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, when people can just access those and have a sense that they can access the health system, I think that goes a long way, too, towards potential prevention, because there's no question that homelessness is a public health issue as well.
Elaborate on that. What do you mean it's a public health issue?
I think part of the problem, going back to the whole Murray situation, because people kind of have these limited resources, their health might really take a back seat to their other needs. So they might feel like, I cannot take the time to go and address my health issues because I need to be at work. Mm-hmm. Or they might feel like they can't go to the doctor because there's a copay and they just don't have that extra money to make that copay. So they're not going to do that. So their health really starts to deteriorate. So I think that's definitely part of that health
We see that in the Valley also. And all of this is interrelated. Absolutely. Wellness, housing, having a home that's safe and warm and you're able to keep your health up. And then having a job. Mm-hmm. Then in the Mat-Su, we add one more piece, and that's transportation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Getting to the job from your home. Sometimes because of the low income, the home's further out from the job center. And it takes that much more work to try and get in.
Yeah.
So it's funny, I guess I'm realizing what a narrow view I was looking at this issue from, because I was looking at this okay, so we need to make sure that people can pay their rent, people can pay their utilities, people can pay their gas money to get to and from work. But I guess I hadn't looked at this overall picture of prevention really needs to incorporate making sure people have access to health care. And so is that something that you all can work on too?
In the Valley, what's really been nice is we've got a group of eight agencies that are partnering together. And through that group of eight agencies, we've been able to receive funds through the Basic Homeless Assistance Program, the Emergency Solutions Grant, and the Continuum of Care Grant Systems.
Okay, so these are just chunks of state and federal money.
Exactly. And they're passed through. Some of them are passed through from the federal government through the state. Some of them are state matched, that
and
kind of a thing.
Passed through just means they have this chunk of money and they give it to local organizations to use as best fit?
Right. And there's an extensive grant application process. So you're sure to get it to the folks who need it the most.
Wait, so grant application process, like the organizations apply?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. So there's an annual application process for basic homeless assistance program grant funds.
Okay. So it passes through, it gets to local organizations. Like, how are local organizations competing against one another for this chunk of money, or do you?
Well, that's the beautiful thing in the Valley, is we were able to jump in early on it and apply as a partnership group. So those eight agencies represent a wide dispersed area in the Valley. And it works. We've got agencies as far out as Talkeetna, Sutton, and we've got them in Palmer and on the Wasilla side of town. So we cover a broad reach, and we're able to reach 2,387 folks back in fiscal year 17.
Wow. And are similar things happening in Anchorage in terms of?
Absolutely. There's definitely partnerships that are coming together. So, for instance, even with the medical respite, we've got three hospitals that are partnering together to fund that piece and to send us the referrals. So that would be Regional, ANMC, and Providence. And then South Central Foundation is directly connected with our clinic. So, and that clinic is expanding not just to be physical health, but also there are going to be some mental health in that clinic as well, which is just, you know, a huge need.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's happening is that Providence has It's kind of working with us through the coordinated entry. So we have several agencies around town that are working together with a rapid rehousing fund that is coming straight from Providence.
And we will.
Sorry, I'm going to jump the gun on that. Yeah.
Those are complicated topics. So we'll explain all that jargon in a little bit. But
Absolutely.
First, I want to jump to the phones. We have Roger from White Mountain on the line. Roger, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. New transportation corridor, extreme weather, high cost of living, limited job opportunities, highest alcohol consumption rate in the United States, 7 times larger than Washington State, highest in the nation to educate a student and coming out on the bottom, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Alaska is the least developed state in the union. Do these have anything to do with our homelessness situation in Alaska? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Roger. He listed a litany of concerns. How are those related to homelessness? That might be out of your...
No, yeah, Roger, thank you very much for your question. They are related. Because when I think about what got me up this morning, what got me ready to go to work, what allows me to stay healthy so I can work with my family and my friends and I can work with my coworkers and make a difference, it's because I had a safe, warm place to sleep last night. I didn't spend all day wondering where I was going to find shelter. I didn't spend all day wondering if I was going to have enough money for food the next day. I'm very fortunate, as well as most Alaskans are very fortunate, to have that warm, safe place to rest, to recuperate, to regenerate, and to be safe and warm. It's very, very important because all of those things won't happen, and many of the negative things will happen if you're not able to have that.
And so Roger was saying a lot of things, I mean, things that have already come up a bit, lack of transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a major cause of homelessness?
I think it definitely plays a part. One of the things that we've been looking at in our program is finding ways to get people even to just job interviews. So we've been we have a grant with Uber, and that's one of the pieces that we're going to be looking into, is using that to get them back and forth to job interviews. And then I think also just coming back to the whole health issue, that's another piece as well. And we have found that there's a kind of a high level of emergency vehicle use in order to get back and forth to the hospital. So something that we also implemented at the Brother Francis shelter is connecting people with cabs so that if the clinic hours are... if the clinic is closed at that time and somebody comes and says that they either have maybe a late doctor's appointment or they really feel the need to get to the hospital and they can't wait, we'll help them with that transportation so that we can help decrease the need for emergency assistance.
And you can provide all these things for folks who are already using the shelter resources. How many of these resources are available for people who are who are in their homes but awaiting an eviction notice or right on the brink?
That's where we step in the Valley, actually.
Okay.
We don't have a shelter in the Valley. We have transitional housing opportunities. But our phone number and our grants are specifically tied to helping people who slip into the ditch or mm-hmm. are one paycheck away from being evicted.
Mm-hmm.
And we in the Valley, we talk about... That's probably 70% of our population is one paycheck away from having a catastrophe that might put them out on the streets. So, as I mentioned earlier, we had over 2,000 assists in fiscal year 17. Those only averaged $444 each.
Oh.
So we're not talking about a great deal of money mm-hmm. to keep people housed and to prevent them becoming homeless. We're talking about $400 about as an assist. And because part of that is because our case managers work so hard to find ways for them to help themselves,
mm-hmm.
for them to look down the road and say, well, okay, if we help you now, who's going to help? How are you going to help yourself next month?
Right.
Okay.
And I'd say we do the same thing with Catholic Social Services, absolutely.
So I'd like, First, I'd like to invite listeners back into the program. You're listening to Talk of Alaska. Please join us with your stories or with your questions here in Anchorage. The number is 550-8422. Statewide, it's 1-800-478-8255 or talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's walk through that process. Mm-hmm. So someone calls, they say, listen, I can't make my rent this month. Like, what are the first set of the questions that you ask either over the phone or in person?
So for us, I think it is a little bit different. I mean, Catholic Social Services, our main focus really is on those who are absolutely the most vulnerable. So we really work more directly with people who are currently experiencing homelessness. But on the flip side, we've also partnered with several agencies in town. Because Catholic Social Services, I think, is one of the larger and more established social service agencies here, there are some prevention dollars that we have. And we kind of manage those funds, and we do the reporting, and we kind of handle the admin aspect of it so that some of the agencies that really work more in prevention and really more have a little more expertise in that particular part can then utilize that money to help those folks. So, for instance, Shiloh Community Housing, Partners for Progress, Consumer Web, those are all folks then that we will refer them to for the actual prevention piece.
Okay. What happens when someone calls the number that you have, Dave, up in the Valley?
Well, we've got a pretty direct process, actually. We basically ask them what the situation is, what part of the Valley do they live in, mm-hmm. and then we'll refer them to an agency that's as close to them as possible to reduce their transportation costs and make it easier for them. And then we'll have to ask some questions as to who's living in the home with you. What is the cost of the rental or the home? What is the cost of what income do you have coming in? Mm-hmm. What's the problem? What's caused the problem? And what do you think will be different next month? So we're looking for that sustainability piece as well. Will you be able to pick things up and make things happen down the road so that you can stay warm and safe in your home?
And so, and one of the things that you mentioned was that you help people come up with solutions. Like, what sorts of things?
We have some pretty incredible case managers. Our case managers are well-versed in what the resources are in the Valley. Through our Project Homeless Connect every year, they meet all these folks, all these agencies that are out there trying to connect their resources with the needs of the low-income folks in the Valley. So they might ask, well, do you need job training? Do you need resume building? Do you need health care access? Do you need, what is it you need so that you'll be sustainable for the long term?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll connect them with resources that will help make that happen. So it might be they'll connect them with Salvation Army and a job training program. Or they might connect them with Valley Charities Inc. and get a clothing voucher. They might connect them with NSTAR and say, you know, you can set up a payment plan. Were you aware of that? And help them set up a payment plan.
Huh. And you, Robin, you lead a group of case managers. Is that
correct?
Similar?
Yes. I can definitely echo exactly what was just said. For us, it's a matter of if somebody's been literally homeless, and then, you know, our objective is to get them kind of stably housed, mm-hmm. Definitely help them figure out their income piece, whether it's through finding employment, finding benefits that will mm-hmm. help increase that income, and then ultimately the kind of the social wellness piece. So all of those pieces are things that we work with. And our case managers, once they identify people and kind of help them get into the housing piece, then that case management piece really comes into play. And the idea at that point is to help them sustain their housing. So now we're preventing a reoccurrence of homelessness mm-hmm. on the other end.
Social wellness. Explain mm-hmm. that term to me.
So we just feel that it's extremely important that once they're in the community, that they have a safe, supportive community that will help them stay housed. So just as an example, this is something that I always found really interesting with the medical respite program. So The medical respite program at Brother Francis Shelter has a lot of people that had been experiencing homelessness in the past, and then as I kind of explained, we have some people like Murray who that was their first time. But when they come into that particular space, they really are healing and they are living together for that whole period of time. And the thing that was, I think, really amazing that happened back there was that there wasn't just physical healing, there was emotional healing. And that was really coming through the relationships that they were forming with each other back there. And on several occasions, we had folks, I can think of two people in particular, two women who came in separately, were there for several weeks. I'll call one Mary and one Sue. But when they left, they made sure that they maintained that relationship outside of the medical respite piece. So they kind of became their community supports. They would visit each other. They would go to the food banks together. That was just a really critical piece in helping them to, I think, sustain their housing once they left. So that's a piece that our case managers work on with them as well.
Nice. Dave, you keep bringing up transitional housing. Transitional housing. What is that?
Well, transitional housing is a belief in a system where a person will come in who has recently been evicted or has lost a job or moved to the Matsu area and had a promise of a place to stay. And then when they got there, the welcome wore thin or the welcome really wasn't even available. So they'll come and they'll say, boy, I need help. I don't have any place to stay tonight. I've been sleeping in my car, but it's getting cold. So we'll try to get them into transitional housing. And rather than go to a shelter system, we've gone to trying to cultivate and build and strengthen transitional housing. So we have a place called Knick House, mm-hmm. and it's a couple of multifamily units. And the one for men is actually a bunkhouse as well as individual rooms. And we have beds there that are available on an emergency basis and on a short-term and then join the program in transitional basis. So mm-hmm. what we hope to do is get them into a program like that, that then will identify the issues, work toward taking the next step, and then work toward getting them into housing. And I'd like to mention one other piece with that, and that is basically you've got to have a good relationship with landlords as well.
Absolutely.
So we'll do landlord luncheons. Our goal is to do them twice a year, where we invite landlords in who have worked with us, and we invite other landlords in who we want to introduce to our program and cultivate relationships between them so they can network, but with us so we can know what is it you're looking for, how can we help our clients become eligible for your housing.
I would like to invite Rich from McGrath onto the program. Rich, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just a quick question. Thanks for a good topic, and it's nice for those people to give their time. Just wondering if a person wanted to get a hold of either one of your organizations, what would be the name of the organization and the phone number? And another question is, say you're not in Anchorage or the Valley. I know you're different organizations and everything, but is there a general number, 800 number, or even a general website a person could go to if they get on a computer if they weren't in one of your areas but had similar issues? Is there some other agency or agencies, a phone number they could call or mm-hmm. a place to get online they could get a hold of somebody?
Great question.
And I'll hang up and listen to you.
Thanks very much, Rich.
So we actually get a lot of people calling us because they've gotten our number from the 211. Mm-hmm. So 211 is certainly one resource to use.
Explain what 211 is.
So 211 is a number that you can call, and really they will come with whatever concern that you have. And if there's some kind of an agency in town that will help you with that particular issue, they have those phone number resources so that they will give you those numbers and then direct you to the resource that they feel will help you with the issue at mm-hmm. hand.
And they have a website as well.
And they have a website as well. Yeah, exactly. And then we have our website, which is cssalaska.org. And on that website, we have phone numbers for all of our programs, whether it's for homeless family services, for our different shelters. We also have a food pantry, which I just want to mention something real quick, if that's okay, because mm-hmm. one of the things that you said earlier that I thought was interesting is that this issue really kind of is beyond sort of that, just that the basic moment of homelessness. And one thing that we have at the main center in Catholic Social Services is our St. Francis House, which is a food pantry. And that's another piece of prevention, because a lot of people, 93% of the people that surveyed that use our food pantry have said that accessing food in that way has allowed them to use their money to pay rent, utilities, or other bills. And we actually serve over 100 families a day at that food pantry. Wow. So it's a big piece of prevention as well.
All right. And we will, at alaskapublic.org, we will post the websites you just mentioned and the numbers you just mentioned. Dave, how do people get a hold of you?
We also encourage folks to use 211. That's what the program is there for. And we look forward to it continuing to help connect people with need, with people with resources. Mm-hmm. But we also have a website. It's Matsu Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. We've simplified. It's mschh.org. So that folks can contact there. Mm-hmm. And there's an email link on there if someone has a question or if they want to, let us know about someone that they know that needs mm-hmm. help. We get a lot of referrals. We get a lot of friends calling in to help friends. Sometimes when you're in need, you don't have the energy or the wherewithal to identify where you can get help. Sometimes it's a friend or a neighbor or a relative who can connect them. So we mm-hmm. look forward to that as well.
And you said that people call a number when they need immediate assistance. What's the number that people call?
They can call 907-232-4450.
232-4450.
But again, rather than have that number sort out all of the needs, 211 is the first place to go. And that number is at 211.
Oh, how very convenient. I want to go back into the conversation that we were having before we took that last call. And you were talking a lot about landlords and the role that landlords play in this. I'd like to hear more about that. Where do landlords fit into the homelessness solution?
That's a big, big piece of this. We actually have a couple of housing specialists, and that really is a big part of their job, is to seek out landlords, especially when people have specific barriers, if they've had previous evictions. This is something that a lot of landlords don't want to deal with. They might not want to rent to somebody that has that issue. So we're really looking for landlords to kind of understand the different situations that our clients are in, and that are really willing to work with them and kind of see them as individuals, mm-hmm. look at their unique situation, and not just kind of look at them as, you know, numbers on a piece of paper. So that's a place, too, where our case managers will go and advocate with these landlords. So we've developed several relationships with a lot of the landlords around town, and they are key to, I think, really helping us move people into permanent housing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Matsu, it's essential, because private home ownership and private housing is how you're going to find an apartment mm-hmm. in the Matsu. We have several low-income projects and homes that are available that are wonderful and managed in a great way, but they're very limited. Mm-hmm. So we rely on good relationships with landlords. One of the key problems that everyone keeps looking for solutions on, so I'd love to mention it on air because we've got so many people out there that could help with this, is how do you convince a landlord to take a chance one more time? Mm-hmm. And the landlord's bottom line always is their bottom line, which you can understand is, well, who's going to help pay when this person, if this person causes $2,000 worth of damage when they move out? And they say, well, I don't have any money. You can't, go ahead and sue me. It won't do you any good. So nationwide, folks are looking for contingency funds or assist funds or mitigation funds and possibly trying to put together a central location where those could be managed and accessed to hold landlords harmless. We need help with that. Somebody come up with a great idea and we'll see what we can do with it.
Is part of the case management process also working with people to help them learn, basic cultural norms and standards as about living in rental properties?
Absolutely. In fact, we had a program for a while there called Ready to Rent.
Hmm.
And it's a national program, and it had been sponsored by, I believe, NeighborWorks for a while. Mm-hmm. And they would send out a trained person, and we would say to our folks, okay, if you would like assistance, we would like you to go to this class so that you're more likely to be sustainable where you are. So you learn how to mitigate problems with fellow tenants and that kind of thing.
We are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll take more of your calls and questions. You can reach us at 550-8422 here in Anchorage or 1-800-478-8255. We're talking about preventing homelessness. What do you think are solutions for your community? What are personal experiences that you've had or someone you know have had? Share with us here at Talk of Alaska after this quick break.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today we're talking about preventing homelessness and what's happening around the state to make that possible and to keep people permanently housed. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-478-8255 or 550-8422. So the term transitional housing keeps coming up, assuming that means transitional as in very short term. How do you go from being in this short-term housing situation to being ready and finding permanent housing? Dave.
Yeah, that's how we try to do it in the Matsu. And basically, you come in and you talk with a case manager and you try to assess your situation. Why are you where you are? What are the resources you have at your fingertips? What's your educational level? What's your employment background? What is your health? What is your wellness? Do you have a resume already put together? Do you have family or friends that can possibly help? Do you have transportation? So we assess where they're at, and then we look at, okay, well, what's the next possible step? And we try to keep things as positive as possible, because once you find folks get on the road toward independence, that's really what they want. It's everybody's got the same goal. They want to be able to stay where they want to stay, eat their meals when they want to eat their meals, go to work, and work is not just money. Work is social contact as well. And it also is independent granting. So from that, then we then will connect them with Job Center out in the Matsu Valley. We'll connect them with employers who are willing to work with them at an entry level, such as Valley Charities and such as Valley Residential Services. And then once they're in that job for a time or two and they get a couple of paychecks under their belt, then they'll move on and we'll connect them with a landlord that they can hopefully then be sustainable and independent with.
And if they can't get employment, do you help them apply for disability?
If that's appropriate, mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult road to go down.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it sounds simple, mm-hmm. and especially when someone's sitting there and, yeah, they've got a evident disability. Well, that's not the end of it. You've got to get the paperwork together. You've got to get the appointments. You've got to get the doctor's approvals. You've got to get a backup to the doctor's approval. And it's just a really long road.
And so earlier you had mentioned that with transitional housing, people are expected to contribute towards that money-wise.
Correct.
How?
Again, the case managers walk them through that.
Mm-hmm.
It might be an entry-level job at McDonald's or Wendy's. Mm-hmm. It might be a entry-level job at Safeway or Fred Meyer. It's where they step in, they start to get a paycheck, and then part of that goes to pay. We're not talking a huge amount of money. We're talking $200 or $300 for the month.
Oh, so very highly subsidized.
Highly
situation.
Subsidized, yes.
I would like to welcome Jed from Anchorage on the line. Jed, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I commend you all, but what you're doing is crisis management, primarily because the public policy, and I speak to the federal and state government and the local municipality of Anchorage, has failed to address the question of investing in people. And people keep having babies, and the problem of homelessness is not going to go away until affordable housing is created. In Los Angeles, for example, there are 57,000 homeless people. This is a crisis that's in every major city in America. Yet our leadership does not seem to value the people of America, and the private sector is not motivated to build affordable housing because they can't make money doing it. So, to speak to a long-term solution to homelessness, there should be a public-private partnership to start building more housing, because this problem is not going away,
mm-hmm.
and it won't go away until there is affordable housing.
And Dave, you're part of the Matsu Coalition on not just homelessness, but also housing.
That's correct.
Can you respond to this? Are there...
Absolutely. Thank mm-hmm. you for your comment. That hits it right on top of the head, the nail, so to speak, so we can... need to get more nails and boards and put them together and make low-income housing. Just this last fall, we did a affordable housing tour of the Matsu Valley, and we invited our local legislative representatives and their aides, and we toured around the valley and showed them where the low-income housing is. And they were amazed, because I grew up in Michigan and went to school in Chicago, and low-income housing has a very bad reputation down there. Mm-hmm. It's the projects. It's the tall buildings. It's where people live that, you know, just don't want to work or whatever, all those typical stereotypes. Well, in the Matsu, it's scattered site. The largest place...
Meaning it's not all lumped together. It's mixed in with all the other housing.
Exactly. And if you were driving by, you might say, oh, maybe that's a retirement community. Or, oh, maybe that's independent living for some folks. Or, oh, I wonder if I can apply to live there. That's really an attractive place.
Mm-hmm.
So we're fortunate in the Matsu Valley. We've got Valley Residential Services that really focuses on that, along with a few other agencies working together. And there are grants out there. There are funds out there. One unique solution that was proposed is through the USDA. They have funds available for folks to renovate housing.
Hmm.
If the folks agree to then use those funds or use that renovated housing for low-income folks, at least a portion of the housing.
Mm-hmm.
So someone could take a dilapidated fourplex or sixplex, fix it up, make it nice and safe and warm and comfortable, and then rent it at reduced rates and still make money. That's the falsehood that's out there. You can rent homes, you can rent apartments in a multiplex if you manage it properly at lower than fair market rate rents and still make money.
And Robin, I see you doing a lot of nodding over here as well.
I would agree. I mean, we have similar programs here in Anchorage as well. And I do. I mean, I totally understand what this gentleman is saying, and I would also thank him for his phone call, because we do look at homelessness as a symptom of larger societal issues. Mm-hmm. But there are some programs here in town. We're doing one right now with NeighborWorks Alaska, where they have housed people in scattered sites, and we're providing some case management for those people. And again, with the thought that we can help them to not only sustain that housing, but then also to increase their self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. So whether that's looking at employment, again, looking at their benefit situation. So without a doubt, there are programs in place, and we are working with other agencies within the community to help to solve some of these problems. But there's no question that that is a big issue.
Jed, thank you very much for your call. We keep talking scattered site. We keep talking mixing people together. That seems to be a running theme, that you don't just isolate a chunk of our community. Why is that a valuable thing to be doing?
Well, from our perspective, I think one of the most important things that you can do for somebody is always treat them with dignity and respect. We work from a trauma-informed care service model. And so we want to make sure that everybody has that choice, right? That they can choose to live in the most or the least restrictive environment that they feel that they can thrive in. So that's a big piece, I think, of the scattered site piece. And again, because we have that intensive case management, I mean, we have case managers that are kind of, we call them our community-based case managers. They will initially connect with people no matter where they are, if they're camping, if they're in a hotel, help them into those housing facilities. And then also at Brother Francis and at Claire House. So we really work with these intensively with people so that when they're in those particular housing units, if they're scattered sites, that they can kind of find the supports they need. Some of them are just natural supports, looking at family members and friends. And then they're kind of the wider community supports. But absolutely. I think people need that choice. They need the choice to be there.
That's exactly the same thing going on out in the Matsu. This is fun going back and forth, Robin.
you do it pretty in sync, it seems.
We're really fortunate out in the Matsu Valley because we have the Matsu Health Foundation out there as well. And their whole premise is wellness. Mm-hmm. And that includes housing. They have a housing division of that wellness program, as well as access to health care, as well as employment, as well as transportation. So we're looking at the whole person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as far as, communication goes, and we're social beings. So in the Matsu, we can house people in cabins, but we don't find that that's especially the most favorable thing to do. Because those folks, once they get into that cabin, they've got to keep it warm, and it's taken forever to do that, and it isolates them. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. John Weaver at the Valley Residential Services is a part of building additional low-income housing. Mm-hmm. And the newest project they've been working on, he insisted that they have community rooms. And those community rooms are set up so folks can come down and read the newspaper, check email, but also visit with their friends. And there's game tables and there's beverage centers and all that kind of a thing. Because, again, we are social creatures.
Mm-hmm. I would like to welcome Joni from Haines onto Talk of Alaska. Joni, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. It's very interesting. I've been listening to your conversation there, and I want to thank you for all that you do. My question is, do you know of any programs that help people with mental health issues? Because I know a number of them would be homeless. Mm-hmm. And is there an agency that does, if your agency does not? Also, some of these low-income houses that you're talking about, do they take people with a police record, like felony records? And I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Joni. Let's take question number one. Are there programs that are specifically focused on individuals who experience mental health challenges?
Yes. So we have, in fact, the RISE program that I was just talking about, that is specifically a program where people have mental illness. Mm-hmm. They're being housed through different voucher programs. And then we provide that case management. So that's the piece that, again, helps them sustain that housing. And then we also have some specific grants that are really dedicated in that same vein towards helping people with severe mental illness and housing. And again, it's that case management piece as well.
And so does this mean that in some of these programs you can incorporate in-home care if necessary, or is that a separate piece that isn't linked in with the housing piece?
That's kind of, I would say that that's a separate piece. It's not necessarily linked in. I mean, part of it is, you know, when the case managers are working with these individuals, we also have community, Anchorage Community Mental Health. So we have some of our, the people that we're working with will access the mental health piece of that. And then also even the South Central Foundation, there are behavioral health facilities. I mean, they definitely exist. And part of it, I think, for us is also just helping people connect with those resources, understand what, you know, that they're there and that they can access them. And as I said, we're also bringing in a mental health clinician into the Brother Francis shelter.
All right.
In the Matsu, part of our partnership, part of the beauty of our partnership is the diversity of the agencies involved. Mm-hmm. And Daybreak Incorporated out of Palmer does mental health counseling, has case managers for that. So if one of our agencies, say Blood and Fire Ministries out in Meadow Lakes, finds a client, helps them with the housing, but notices there's really some additional services would be beneficial, they've got a direct line to refer them to Daybreak and or Alaska Family Services in Palmer as well. So there's help. Yeah. It's, again, it's connecting the need with the resources.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a lot of just solid collaborations between the organizations.
Yep.
Absolutely.
We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more questions from callers here on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing homelessness and preventing homelessness. What have your experiences been? What resources do you think we need to get on board? We're taking more calls at 1-800-478-8255, also 550-8422. Emails at talk@alaskapublic.org. Ken from Wasilla is on the line. Ken, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yes, I have some history on this homeless condition. In 1969, there was a huge influx of hippies, as they used to call them, into Anchorage in Alaska. It was a popular place to go. And all of a sudden, you had people that were squatting all over the place. So there was a big discussion in Anchorage about setting up a homeless camp down by Tip Creek for hippies. Well, here we are, still dealing with the same kind of situation, homeless people. And each generation is going to create another group of homeless people because people are careless with their resources and careless with their health and wealth.
Before we go any further, is that a true statement? Like, would you guys agree with this idea that people are just careless with their resources? Because I suppose in my experience in interacting with people, that isn't what I've often seen. Robin.
Yeah. No, I don't necessarily agree with that statement. I think that, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, earlier is this whole notion that there is a shortage of affordable rentals. And I think, you know, according to the National Coalition for Homelessness, simultaneously we're also seeing more people kind of entering into poverty. Mm-hmm. And so we do really have that kind of hand-to-mouth, paycheck-to-paycheck situation where savings is a really difficult thing, and you have one catastrophic event, one illness, and that can definitely be the piece that launches you into homelessness. And the other piece I think that's really an interesting point to make is that the the biggest rise in the homeless population right now really is families with children.
Oh.
So that's I think that's something that a lot of people don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right, I apologize, Ken. Please continue. We have lost our caller. We missed a part of the question from Joni from earlier. She asked about restrictions in terms of people have felonies or criminal histories. Does that limit of the availability of housing?
Joni, you've hit the nail on the head there again. The most difficult person to find housing for in the Mat-Su or anywhere in the state is a felon who has been convicted of child abuse, sexual offense of some sort. If you want to find the hardest person to house, that's the person. Second hardest would probably be someone who has one or two felony convictions that maybe are not sexual in nature,
mm-hmm.
but are a pattern of breaking the law and not following the rules of society or whatever it is. Those are difficult to house. Not impossible, mm-hmm. but very, very difficult. And that's where that mitigation fund comes in again.
Mm-hmm.
How to get a landlord, how to get an agency to take a chance one more time on an individual. And the transitional housing we've been talking about can help with that. They can go into the transitional housing, meet people who've been where they've been at, that community piece develops, and this is how they got out. And do you really want to get out, or are you just here for a meal and a safe place to stay for the night? So there's some honesty that can happen there that might not happen in other areas. And then once that transition opportunity runs through, what happens is through the job they get with the transitional housing piece, they're able to build their resume, show that they've been sober, show that they've been on time to work for the last 6-8 weeks, and suddenly now there's now they have a personal reference. Personal reference as well as a work reference. That can help them get into that entry-level job and move on.
All right. I would like to welcome Dave from Anchorage to the program. Dave, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Got a little bit of a unusual but probably common sort of a situation,
mm-hmm.
where we were emergency foster parents who adopted one of our foster person,
mm-hmm.
and now she's getting to the age where she's starting to ask about birth parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a decade or more of no knowledge of birth parents, the birth mom in particular, I was able to, through some contact on the street, find that the birth mom is out there on the streets of Anchorage on mm-hmm. the west side of town,
mm-hmm.
mostly. Mm-hmm. And you know, at some point in the not too distant future, going into the teen years, we would like, our daughter would like, to meet her birth mom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good idea to introduce her to a person on the street as her mom, probably. Ooh. So how would we track that person down, or how could an agency contact that person on the street and let her know that her daughter would like to reestablish contact and mm-hmm. so get her into housing.
Mm-hmm.
She's abusing opioids still, and that's why she lost her daughter, and
mm-hmm.
That's why she's on the street. And so, you know, there's a whole myriad of issues mm-hmm. there.
It's complicated.
So basically, the basic thing is, you know, from our end, helping our daughter answer some questions that she might have by getting reacquainted with her birth mom,
mm-hmm.
and that is dependent on her birth mom deciding to make changes or whatever, and
so
what are the resources?
That's a great question. So in terms of outreach, Robin, what if you're trying to locate a specific person who may not currently be housed, what kinds of options are available in terms of outreach and finding the person?
That's a really great question.
Thanks.
I think one of the biggest issues is that, you know, all of the agencies have very strict confidentiality rules that they need to abide by. So nobody could, like, for example, let's say that this person was staying at Brother Francis Shelter. It's not a situation where you could call and ask to speak with her. They would not confirm or deny that she was actually staying there. However, if you have a sense of maybe some of the agencies that she's working with, the approach really would be to contact them and then leave a message. So, again, you won't know that maybe you're even hitting the right agency, but you could call and say, we're trying to reach this person. If you come in contact with them, here's my name and number. Could you please let her know that we are trying to reach her and have her reach back? That's really the best approach to take.
Mm-hmm.
Along that line, if I can be kept on the line, mm-hmm. to give the call takers my information so that the representative from Anchorage could maybe reach out to me, I could pass the info along.
Why don't we're gonna sign you off, and then if you call back the station in about 10 minutes, we can get your number and pass it on.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the other part of the question is, is there a way for one of the agencies to reach out to the agencies? One of the agencies to reach out and see if they can track the person down.
So if you go on to Facebook, there's an organization called Forget Me Not, and Forget Me Not is really good at helping track some people down who have been living on the streets. Dave,
I just wanted to thank you mm-hmm. for taking this young gal in and adopting her eventually. I think that's just awesome. More families mm-hmm. need to do that. There's a huge need in the state for children to be in safe and secure homes. So thank you for doing that. And if I might just plug one movie, it's called Same Kind of Different as Me. Same Kind of Different as Me. I would encourage you and others in your situation to watch that movie and find some help. And mm-hmm. then the last thing, if I can, thank you for waiting until it's appropriate for your daughter to meet her biological mom. Most important right now is that she knows she's loved by you and your family, and she's getting the stability needed through that. So thank you again.
Thank you very much, Dave. We'll make sure that you can connect with Catholic Social Services here in Anchorage, who can help you out, hopefully. We are going to jump to one very last quick call, Dwight in Anchorage. Dwight, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Boy, there's a lot to talk about here. A lot of things have been brought up, but I guess going back to that guy who was speaking about the carelessness of resources, and we can see that everywhere. I would point to military spending, which seems to be a favorite of most politicians seeking election. They're probably not going to get elected if they talk about reducing military spending and increasing the funding for mm-hmm. social services. And our current misleader in chief, more military spending and less funding for social services.
And would you all agree that there's a scarcity of funding for some of the social services that you provide?
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. So I don't know how you can get in front of that, but it's a question of both local will and national will mm-hmm. to deal with the situation. It's very complicated, but maybe we can start with more money for social services by taxing many of these churches that don't pay any taxes.
I'm not going to comment on that. There are churches that actually reach out and do homelessness prevention. Have you all worked with them?
Yeah, I'd love the opportunity to mention what our group known as Family Promise Matsu does. We've got an organization there that provides leadership to pulling together 12 partner churches. They're moving toward 14 partner churches where the churches turn their Sunday school rooms into houses, homes for the week. And they provide food and safety and shelter.
Wow. Well, that is all that we have time for today. Thank you very much for your call, Dwight. I appreciate it. Thank you to everyone else who called in to Talk of Alaska. We've been discussing homelessness and homelessness prevention with Robin Dempsey, the Homeless Family Services Program Director at Catholic Social Services, and Dave Rose, the coordinator for the MATSU Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. You can learn more about solutions for preventing homelessness by going to alaskapublic.org/solutions. Thanks to everyone who called and to everyone who listened. This has been Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.